Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. To my right is the sports machine, Sean Levine. Directly in front of me is Rob Brenton. How are you guys doing today?
I'm all right, although I just realized that I left my sunroof open down the lot, but I'm all right.
Well, hopefully during the commercial break, you go fix that. I certainly don't want your car to be flooded.
Well, it's too late for that.
Coming up in about 30 minutes or so, we'll talk about National Hamburger Day. We appreciate you listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Before we get into sports for the day, do me a favor. The text line number that you know is completely gone. We have a new text line number and is the same as the phone line, 913-576-7610. So if you want to text the show, if you want to interact with the show, there's only one phone number to do that, 913-576-7610. Let's talk about Patrick Mahomes' contract. We heard today from Sam Mellinger of the Kansas City Star that the Chiefs and their quarterback have agreed and started contract negotiations. Here's what Mike Gennetti had to say from SpotTrack.
It's going to be big, and I actually just took some time here to try to crunch some of the numbers based on what I've heard or what I'm anticipating. Look, there's some metrics that have to be hit for sure. And I understand why we're hearing this now and not a month later, because the second Deshaun Watson and Dak Prescott hit their contracts, everything exponentially gets bigger for Patrick Mahomes. So just from a numbers standpoint, obviously you got to get to that $40 million mark, in my opinion, and then that also means $120 million over the first 3 years. And that's really hard to do when you're sitting here trying to crunch the numbers and also trying to keep the Chiefs cap at bay, because they've got about $3 to $4 million to work with in 2020 right now. So unless they get creative with how they structure this Mahomes extension, they're going to have to maybe extend or restructure Travis Kelce and a couple other contracts to make this all kind of come together. But that, to me, those are the big numbers. It's probably it's a four-year extension at $160 million of new money, and 120 of that lives in the next three seasons.
So that's Mike Gennetti with SpotTrack. If you follow the NFL and are into the business side of it, you certainly have been on SpotTrack.com. So from Sam Mellinger's story, quote, "We are left with only a few certainties. First, Patrick Mahomes will be the highest paid player in the history of the NFL. I think everybody is on the same page when it comes to that. Second, his contract has the power to change such negotiations in this league going forward." Quote, "We're all watching," from one NFL agent to Sam Mellinger. Quote, "If anyone has ever had the leverage in the history of the world, it's your quarterback, and it's someone like Patrick Mahomes." And someone else said, quote, "He can do whatever he wants. I have thought this from the very beginning. I have not moved from it. There's no reason to move from it." Patrick Mahomes is going to make $200 million over the life of this deal. It's just simply, is it going to be a five-year deal, or is it going to be a four-year deal and Mahomes is really going to hit the Chiefs over the head? But I've always thought that the $200 million mark and being the first player in NFL history to do that was always going to be the play for him. And we're starting to see from a guaranteed standpoint what that money would look like. It's going to be between $120 and $150 million. So as these negotiations continue to move on, and I certainly expect them to be on the same page and sign a deal by the time this team would be going to St. Joe, he is going to make at least $200 million here over the next 4 to 5 seasons.
So by your math, the base meant for him is $40 million a year, and the ceiling is $50 million a year. I completely agree. And if you look at the other highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL, he's worth it. Russell Wilson, $35 million. Ben Roethlisberger gets 34. Goff gets 33. Rodgers gets 33. And Kirk Cousins gets 33. So if you're talking about $7, $8, $10 million more, he's $7, $8, $10 million more productive than those guys, and it's not even close. So if you tell me that Pat ends up getting 45 or 50, yeah, that sucks, because that means that other moves likely aren't going to happen. Because once Pat gets that money, it's completely different. I mean, when you're paying him $45 million a year versus paying him $5 million a year, it completely changes everything. But I don't necessarily think that the timing of Dak Prescott or Deshaun Watson have a lot to do with the final number on the end of Patrick Mahomes' contract. And here's why. Because we always talk about Pat's done things, not only that those guys haven't done, but that no quarterback in the league right now or in the history of the NFL have ever done. Why should his contract be any different? Like, if you want to talk about Jared Goff getting 33, Roethlisberger signs the next year, gets a million more, Wilson signs the next year, gets a million more, cool, that makes a lot of sense. But if you're talking about Patrick Mahomes, he's kind of in his own stratosphere when it comes to the NFL and certainly the quarterback position. So even though most of the time you kind of figure out what the next guy gets paid based on what the guy before him got paid, I don't really think what Dak or Deshaun end up getting is really contingent upon Pat's contract.
And what you're talking about is a revolutionary contract. So in the story from Sam Mellinger, one possibility that the players around the league are looking at is Mahomes tying his salary to a percentage of the salary cap. If you remember 6 months ago, before all of this stuff started, when we were having conversations about a new CBA, we all looked at the next 3 years and how much the salary cap was going to explode. With the infusion of sports gambling, it is going to be a much different salary cap in 2022 and 2023. That's where the real money is going to be. So the reason I think Mahomes has a chance, possibly, to hit that ceiling we talked about of $50 million, that's what it's going to be. It's going to be tying his salary to a percentage of the salary cap, so he doesn't have a set number every year. But once that boom happens in 2022 and 2023, and we'll certainly see what it looks like post-corona, that's where the big-time money is going to be. If he's going to sign a traditional contract like every player in the history of the NFL has, then he's going to get a five-year, $200 million deal, $150 million guaranteed contract, and there's certainly nothing wrong with it. But he's got a chance to do something that Peyton Manning never did. He's got a chance to do something that Brady or Rodgers or Russell Wilson never did. If he can get this, and he might be in the one situation with the one owner that would potentially give that, where it's going to be every year 20% of the Chiefs' salary cap is going to go directly to Patrick Mahomes, he has a chance to blow that $40 million mark completely out of the water once the cap changes under the new CBA.
Well, if you want to make sure that he gets his market value and keep himself the highest paid player in the NFL, he either has to do that, like you're talking about, get real creative, or he basically has to sign two-year contract after two-year contract after two-year contract, because every couple of years, somebody else, another quarterback, ends up breaking the bank. So you're right. And when it comes down to it, I think that Pat, at this point in his career, should try to maximize his value. Now, I would understand if he does what Tom Brady did the last few years of his career and he says, I want talent around me, I want to keep winning, so instead of taking $50 million, I'm going to do everybody here a big favor and only take $43 million, which sounds a little bit ridiculous coming out of my mouth. But I also think that if you're talking about who does more for whom, the Chiefs for Patrick Mahomes or Patrick Mahomes for the Chiefs, it's very obvious that it's Patrick Mahomes for the Chiefs. I mean, this franchise has been looking for that guy since I was born, since my grandpa was born. So I think that Pat's at a point in his career where you're talking about, yeah, he's already got generational money. If you want to talk about the Adidas money and the Oakley money and all the different endorsements that he has in playing in the NFL for the last 3 years. But this is his first chance to make that huge $40, $50 million deal. And the truth is, he doesn't really owe Kansas City a hometown discount if he doesn't want to give it.
I'm looking at this deal and where I think the biggest challenge for the Kansas City Chiefs is going to be is finding that sweet spot. Finding the sweet spot of paying Mahomes what he's worth and making him the highest paid player in the history of the NFL, and also creating the flexibility to continue to keep their roster as stocked and loaded as it is. That's going to be a very difficult balance for this team moving forward. You think this team has a chance to be a dynasty and Mahomes has a chance to win five Super Bowls. Man, it's hard to do that if you're going to be such a burden on the cap and you're going to have to kind of cut corners at other places on the team. Like, giving him a percentage of the cap that can kind of move and be a sliding scale, that might be the best way to kind of find that sweet spot. So Mahomes is always happy with his compensation, but it also gives them the flexibility to extend Travis Kelce's contract, to keep somebody like Tyrann Mathieu here after his deal is over. That's going to be the key to winning multiple of these things. Everybody I hear from in Kansas City thinks Mahomes has a chance to go to six of these things. Man, you don't go to six of these things if you're going to weigh on the cap the way that you're talking about with those short-term kind of deals. So I think the Chiefs, I think what's going to make this conversation very difficult is everybody's on the same page about a couple of things. Pat is deserving of the money. Pat should get the money, but also creating enough flexibility to keep this roster fluid over these next 4 or 5 years while Pat's still in his prime.
Well, and that's on Veach, and that's partially on Clark Hunt, and that's certainly on Andy Reid with the control that he has over there, one Arrowhead Drive. To make sure that, yeah, one and two and three, Patrick Mahomes is happy, but then that you draft, put players on the cheap around him, and then make moves like they've done the last couple of years, where if you look at Travis Kelce's contract, he is so underpaid. He makes, what, $8 million a year? Dude's making $8 million a year, and he produces like a wide receiver that gets paid $20 million a year. Even the deal that they signed Tyreek Hill to this last offseason, largely because of timing, if you want to say Tyreek won that deal, the Chiefs won that deal, it's pretty clear the Chiefs won that deal, and that's what they're going to have to keep doing. So you got to keep the big names around as long as you can, but we all know what it's going to come down to. You got to keep drafting well, and you got to keep drafting skill position players around Pat, and that's what they've done the last couple of years with Mecole Hardman and Edwards-Helaire.
Coming up in about 20 minutes, today is National Hamburger Day. We'll talk about the coach of the Kansas City Chiefs and his love for cheeseburgers. But coming up next, hashtag TigerBlood, Max Scherzer, perfectly sums up the Major League Baseball player position when it comes to starting their regular season. We'll discuss it coming up. It's The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive. Thanks so much for listening on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Do us a favor and put in the new text line number, 913-576-7610. If you have the old one, go ahead and delete it. The phone line and the text line are the exact same number, 913-576-7610. Jeff Passan, who has been all over the story of Major League Baseball and its start of the regular season, went on the Get Up yesterday to talk about Max Scherzer's comments.
When you have a voice like Max Scherzer's, a guy who has multiple Cy Young Awards, a guy who's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame, a guy who is widely recognized as being really intelligent, that puts some weight and some heft behind them. And this is where the Players Association in the past has been. You have guys like Tom Glavine, you have guys, you know, dating back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, who were among the foremost players in the sport. And when you have someone like that with words that strong, I think it really illustrates how angry the players were at Major League Baseball's proposal on Tuesday.
So that's Jeff Passan of ESPN. If you mixed it, Max Scherzer, hashtag TigerBlood, tweeted this out last night. After discussing the latest developments with the rest of the players, there's no reason to engage with MLB any further in any further compensation reductions. We have previously negotiated a pay cut in the version of prorated salaries, and there's no justification to accepting a second pay cut based on the current information the union has received. I'm glad to hear other players voicing the same viewpoint and believe that MLB's economic strategy would completely change if all documentation were to become public information. The players are playing a very obvious game here. The owners are trying to cry poverty. The owners own a billion-dollar company and are trying to cry poverty. So the players are simply saying, hey, if you're poor, release the information so everyone can see and we can have a better idea of the economic hardships on both sides. We know what the player's salary is going to be reduced. We have no understanding of what's going to happen to the owners and what their books look like. The players have seemed to now be on the same page. We are taking this hardline stance. We believe that we had a deal in place in March. You guys have now gone back on the deal. We're not accepting less than what we think is fair. It's a dangerous game, a bold game from the players.
Wasn't Aaron Crow on that MU pitching staff with Max Scherzer too?
He was.
That's a nasty team right there. Well, what he said was, and I quote, we've got no reason to engage with Major League Baseball. Now, that's taking it somewhat out of context. There were a lot of words before and a lot of words after that. But the crux of what he's saying is we don't like what the owners came with, and so we're not going to talk right now. I think that the best way to play it from somebody like Max Scherzer, who not only is really smart and really well-respected and probably is going to be a Hall of Famer, it's different from Blake Snell, a guy who's only been in the league for a few years, only a handful of people know his name. When Scherzer speaks, people listen, and they should. I just think that what he's talking about is essentially, we don't like the first offer that the owners gave us. And I think everybody would agree, C-Dot, you, me, probably the owners in a moment of truth, that they lowballed the players with the first offer. They incredibly lowballed them. They said, not only are we only going to give you 50% because you're only playing in 50% of the games with your salary, but on top of that, we're going to take less away from you because we're going to be making less. Like, it's not a fair deal at all, but we all know the way negotiations work. Side A comes to the table, side B comes, they throw an offer out there, then there's a counteroffer, and then maybe some in-house fighting, and then eventually they come to a conclusion. It sounds to me like Max Scherzer kind of shrugged his shoulders and said, nah, that's not enough for me, I don't like your original offer, so we have no reason to talk to you. I would negotiate back and forth before you say this isn't going to work out.
But we say, though, that you would negotiate back and forth. I think the players have said we've negotiated. This is our negotiation. Like, that's part of a negotiation. This is our offer.
What do they want,
though? 50% of what they're supposed to be paid. The owners are supposed to pay them. If they want them to play 82 games, they want to be paid for 50% of the season. This is the amount of money that we want. You guys are trying to give us a percentage less than that. You guys are trying to give us 30% of what we're asking
for. Well, yeah, that's not negotiation. That's not how it works. You can't just come to the neither side can do this. The way negotiations work is there has to be somebody that budges and gives in eventually, and you have to come to a common ground. If the players are going to hold the stance that we want 50% because we're playing 50% of the games and we don't care that y'all are making less money because of parking and beer and food and ticket sales and all that, then they're a little bit in the wrong also. I don't know what the exact number is, and I don't know what the best conclusion is, but they can't just say, here's our stance and we're not coming off of it. And then the owners say, well, no, we're only going to do this and we're not coming off of it. Well, if that's what happens, then we're not going to have any baseball. And I think that's a very dangerous game.
I mean, right now, they're playing a big game of chicken. You got to give the players credit. You've been saying this entire time, hey, if you don't like it, you can go do something else, go work at Home Depot. Man, the players have put their foot down, and they're doing what you're saying. This is what we want. We're not interested in anything else you guys are talking about. This is our proposal. If that's not the deal that you guys can come to, then cool. I was reading a story right before we got on the air with Passan. He doesn't think that all the owners want baseball to return because they're so cash poor and because they think that this plan is going to end up losing the money as opposed to making the money. The player stance here is pretty clear. We might not like the way that one player and Blake Snell communicated it, but at this point, we've heard from enough other players to know exactly what their stance is going to be. And they're willing to fall on it. And if there's any players union that we see is willing to say, hey, we ain't going to play, it's been Major League Baseball players. NBA players eventually play. NFL players always go play. Man, baseball unions have showed us from the beginning of time, if you don't give us what we want, we simply aren't suiting up. Is that what the owners can afford? Right now, they're playing a big game of chicken, and they are on two completely different sides. I'm with you. I think at some point there is some level of compromise, but the players seem to think that that compromise is going to come from the owners. It ain't coming from them.
If you're right, then that's pretty short-sighted of these owners. It's borderline idiotic to think, you know what, we think that we're going to either lose money this year or not make as much money as we otherwise would have. That's really short-sighted because that's looking at it just this year, because we all hope and pray that this is a one-year thing and that baseball and sports somewhat return to normalcy in the future. I mean, think back to 1994, the strike of 94. I honestly believe that if 4 years later, the summer of 1998 didn't happen, the McGuire and Sosa summer, that baseball would still be suffering and be even less popular than it is now. And it might be out there with the MLS and the UFC, like kind of buried beyond the NBA and the NFL, if it wasn't for 1998, because that's how much the strike turned people off. People went, you know what? You guys are multimillionaires fighting billionaires even back then and can't agree? Then I'm not going to pay. I'm not going to go out there. I'm not interested. There were a lot of people that did that. And then 98 came around and everybody was like, oh, this is kind of cool. I want to watch it. But if it didn't, man, it's a very bad idea for these owners just to look at it in a one-year vacuum and say, this year is going to be bad for us. It'll be much, much worse if there's no baseball going forward.
I mean, someone's going to have to swallow their pride in order for these negotiations to move forward. We have enough historical examples to think that that will not be the players. I mean, Max Scherzer here is one of the more prominent players and is in that group of players that is going to lose the greatest amount of money. I disagree with Passan a little bit. Max Scherzer to me is 100% going in the Hall of Fame. Man, for him to type this out and say, we're done having conversations, there's no justification for us to accept this, I'm glad to see other players standing up and this can all change. If the baseball owners would simply open their books in something they've never done in the history of baseball, and they've been playing baseball since the eighth day of Earth's creation, like after God rested, the eighth thing he did was create baseball, they've never done this before. If that's what the player's stance is going to be, hey, you guys are telling us how hard this this is. And we understand that it's hard times for everybody. Well, then show us how hard it is. I think that some of these owners are playing coy with the money, too. I think they've always done that. Baseball is a little bit different sport. It's a lot more of a walk-up crowd. It's much more of a cash crowd. So I think these owners have been pocketing money and pocketing money for the longest time and haven't been telling the players this. And the players are like, hey, if you guys are really this poor and this is really the deal we have to accept for us to move forward, then show us the books. They don't want to show the books. The players are taking the stance. I commend them for it.
I think they both need to come off of their original stance and be willing to negotiate a little bit and understand that times are completely different. Because if you're the players right now and you say we want 50%, there is some truth to the fact that the owners aren't going to make money. Now, the players could come back and say, we don't care. You guys are billionaires. This has nothing to do with us. We're going to go out there and do our job half the time, so we want half the money. But the truth is, if we're just talking about bottom line, the owners do have a little bit of a fight. Now, I don't think the owners have enough of a fight to say, here's what we're going to pay you and not budge a little bit. Like you said, somebody has to budge, because if they don't, and maybe if they don't for the next few days, it's going to be okay. And maybe for the next week, it's going to be okay. But you said if we don't have a plan in baseball back by July 4th, then this thing might not happen. Bro, that's not that far away. So they can keep playing this game of chicken, but at some point, you're going to hear the conversation of, we might not have baseball this year.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll talk about the new onside kick rule that has been pushed back just a little bit. And today is National Hamburger Day. We'll talk about the coach of the Kansas City Chiefs and his love for cheeseburgers. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Do me a favor, download the new text line. The text line number is 913-576-7610. If you have the old text line number, I'm not even going to tell you what it is. I don't even remember what
it's
it is
dead
anymore. But you should text the new one, 913-576-7610. That is a new text line number, the new phone line number. You can text and call the exact same number. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll get into a brand spanking new Levine's List, and we'll talk about Andy Reid, who is going into, once again, his love for cheeseburgers. Before we talk about the onside kick rule, did you guys see the picture that Westport is flooded once again? Am I the only one that thinks that Westports get flooded at least 3 to 5 times a year now? I am no meteorologist.
No.
And I don't know anything about irrigation.
Mm-mm.
But Westport has been around since what? The 70s? The 60s? How long has the Westport Bar District been a thing?
I mean, my guess would be longer than that, but I don't know.
They haven't figured out a way to stop it from flooding every single year. Like, we know at some point it's going to rain. We know at some point it's going to rain a lot. They haven't figured out the whole drainage system at Westport over all these years. Not one single smart person has figured it out. Think about all the medical and all the technological advances we've had as a society. Not one single person has figured out how to fix the flooding at Westport. Does this all the time.
Why are you calling out Westport and not the Plaza? Like, the Plaza is the site of a horrendous flood years and years ago. And Brush Creek, every single time it sprinkles, it ends up flooding also. So I think maybe this is a Kansas City problem now that you talk it out.
Yeah, maybe it is. It doesn't seem like the Brush Creek flood happens nearly as much. I'm not saying they have it 100% solved, but they got those walls. They've done some stuff to kind of curb it a little bit. The Plaza doesn't flood nearly as often as Westport does. Westport floods at least 3 times a year. I know I'm not making that up. At least 3 times a year, it is undrivable, unpassable because of water every single year.
Again, I don't know that it floods any more or less than the Plaza does, but clearly there's an issue with the irrigation system. I do know that there's, whenever I drive out to MCI or KCI, whatever they call it, it's a 3-2 baseball complex. I wish I was better with directions. It's like 20 minutes outside. And anytime that it rains, that place is under like 4 feet of water. So again, I don't know if it's just a Plaza or a Westport problem. I'm starting to think that it's a Kansas City problem.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll talk about Andy Reid on National Cheeseburger Day. But from Tom Pelissero of NFL Network, NFL owners have decided to table the 4th-and-15 alternative to the onside kick. Further discussion is needed. This is very simple to me. Somebody had a really cool, fun idea. And the NFL, we've seen over time, is not really hip to your new, cool, innovative, fun, and creative ideas. They were even going to still allow you the old onside kick. If you wanted to be old and you wanted to be analytics driven and you wanted to kick the ball and give yourself a 4% chance of recovering the onside kick, you were still going to have that opportunity. What's the reason that this didn't get approved? Everybody seemed to be on board. They were making amends to it. I was certain this was going to be a thing. Maybe this is the Madden in me. Maybe this is the Super Tecmo Bowl in me. I was excited about this advancement in modern football. But no, the NFL owners had to take it away just like they take away everything else. It took us 15 years for them to finally let them dance in the end zone and have group celebrations. Is it going to take another 15 years for us to have this onside kick alternative? This was fun.
No, it's not going to be 15 years, but it might be a few, because if you have a rule like this that's so innovative that changes everything, then inherently it's going to give a certain team and a certain style an advantage over others, like the Kansas City Chiefs. If you've got Patrick Mahomes, then you've got a team that's built to basically convert fourth and 15 easier and more often than other teams. So I think that the rule down the road might actually pass, but I think they need to give it a little bit of time, because now it's so innovative, it's so new that teams are going to have to build to either stop it, or teams are going to have to try to build and draft so they can achieve this. Because, I mean, if you're talking about changing the history of the game, most of the time, really in any sport, it's very small, right? Like, think about the changes to the kickoff. All we've really done is at one point, a guy had his finger on top of the ball, and then they were like, no, let's put a tee out there. And then eventually they were like, you know what, instead of having it from the 35, let's move it back to the 30. There have been very small changes. If we're going to change the kickoff, essentially, to the quarterback being on the field with a chance at fourth and 15, I do agree with you. It's a good idea. I also think it's a type of idea that might take a couple of years.
But this is, to me, this rule, and I guess them pushing it back and them not accepting it, it goes against everything that they currently do. Everything about the NFL is on the side of throwing the football. You ain't running the ball on fourth and 15. You'd have to throw it. It would highlight your big-time quarterbacks. Everything in the NFL is about scoring as many points as possible and letting the quarterbacks and skill position guys flourish. What better situation than at the end of the game on a fourth and 15? Now, I do think that we've oversold the Chiefs on fourth and 15 just a little bit. Their percentage of converting might be higher than some teams. The Chiefs were not going to convert this 70% of the time. They maybe were going to be at like 25 or 30% of the time, where, let's just pick a random team like the Miami Dolphins, they were going to be around 11% of the time. But it was certainly going to be a more exciting play. And anything that we've seen from them out of the last 5 years, it has minimized the kicking game and minimized special teams. So why are we now doing something like this that doesn't do that and doesn't promote the stars of the game and throwing the football? I hate this. I wish they had got it passed.
I wonder what the actual number is that Pat has converted in these situations. Now, fourth and 15, I don't know how many times the Chiefs have gone for it on fourth and 15 the couple of years Pat's been the quarterback, but I do know that I've seen a lot of third and 10s and third and 12s and third and 22s. Maybe it's just me. I feel like he converts those half the time, when most of the league might do it 10% of the time, third and long, third to million. For Pat, that feels like third and two or third and three. So I actually do think the Chiefs have a distinct advantage over other teams. And as you point out, why don't we just get rid of the kicking game altogether then? Because a couple of years ago when they moved it up and basically 80% of the kicks end up in touchbacks anyway, what are we really doing? It's the least important part of the game. It's the part of the game where most guys get hurt if there is a punt or kickoff return. Obviously, we can't eliminate the punts because that's getting way too creative. We need punters, but do we really need to see the kickoff to determine who gets the ball?
Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll get into a brand spanking new Levine's List. If you missed it, Andy Reid was on our show earlier this month talking about what he orders at Five Guys.
I go to double cheese, little lettuce, tomato, onions. It could be grilled or raw, a little mayo, ketchup, and I'm ready to roll, man. I mean, I can do one, and if you put two in front of it, I could do that too.
Andy Reid's got a hearty appetite if you can eat two Five Guys burgers. Like halfway through the one, I'm struggling just a little bit. I might tap out, but it depends on who I'm around, because like I don't want to leave with leftovers. Like I don't want whoever I'm eating with to think like they can eat more than me. You
right.
know? Have you ever been in that situation where you really want to order the small, but everybody's ordering the large, you kind of got to do it? Or this happens to me whenever I go to the movies all the time. You see the small popcorn bag, and it looks like it's made for a child. I'm not going to order that. So then you get the large and it's way too much popcorn and you don't even eat 3/4 of it because you're tired of popcorn. So we men do this all the time. I couldn't handle the two Five Guys burgers. The one's more than enough for me. Andy's getting the two burgers and he's getting the shake. Andy's pockets are just a little bit different than the rest of us. In this economic climate, within these economic hardships, you can afford two Five Guys burgers, fries that can feed 12 people just off one medium order and a shake. Yo, Andy Reid, you got to calm down, my guy. You got to calm down.
The place that I'm most guilty of doing what you're talking about is any ice cream place ever. I walk in and they're like, do you want the mini? Do you want the mini mini? Or do you want the mini mini mini? And I'm like, I'll do like the medium, you know, whichever one's in the middle. And then I end up eating a few bites and I realize that I didn't need that whole thing. So yeah, we all overindulge. But I also think that a guy like Andy Reid has proven to be a connoisseur of the hamburger. Like, personally, for me, there's a couple of toppings that have to be on every single burger, right? You got to have your pickles, you got to have your ketchup, and then you got to have your cheese. And I don't care if it's cheddar cheese or American or Swiss or Monterey or even blue cheese, however you do it.
You know my stance on ketchup. Nah.
Right.
And I'm not fooling with it.
What's your stance?
Wait, whoa, whoa, what? No ketchup?
Yeah, he doesn't like ketchup. He's a weirdo. Regular onions, grilled onions, or no onions?
I can go either one. It doesn't matter to me. Like, anybody that likes the regular onions, you're not now opposed to when you throw them on the grill and give them that little bit of char. Like, no one's like, man, I love regular onions, but they're nasty. You put them on the grill. I will say there has been no food that I've changed my opinion on more as an adult than onions. When I was a kid, hated onions, hated peppers. But as I've become an adult, as my palate has become more mature, I appreciate a good onion. I appreciate a good bell pepper. Go ahead and throw a little bit of that on my burger. Now, I'm not fooling with no mushrooms. I don't want anything to do with your mushrooms. Keep those as far. I'm not Mario. Keep them as far away from my meal as possible. But I love an onion. I love a pepper. Put that on there.
Mushrooms are delicious.
Absolutely disgusting.
A good portabella. And kind of like you were saying with the onions.
Why do I want to eat fungus? I'm asking you honestly. Why would I want to put fungus on my burger? Is that not what mushroom is? Fungus? Why would I want to eat that?
I mean, when you call it fungus, it doesn't sound quite as appetizing.
That's what it is.
Oh, yeah, but also, you know what a chicken is, right? Like, it's an animal that runs around that's kind of ugly, and you're eating the insides of it. So when you break down food, yeah, it's kind of gross.
That's all meat, though. I can live with that. Like, I came to that part a long time ago. I came to the part at some point that, yeah, when I eat a cow, I know what cows look like. And somebody went in there and then sliced and diced Zorro'd it up to make me my steak. I can live with that. But I don't know how you can see mushrooms grow out of the ground and then look the way that they do and then go back inside. And then when you put that on your food, it's like, tasty. Absolutely disgusting. Will not do it. Can't do it. Cannot play with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it.
Have you ever seen the Yellow Submarine after eating a mushroom pizza?
No.
Okay, I was just asking. You know,
have I ever told you my mushroom story before? I think I told you my mushroom story about my roommate in college.
This can be good.
So it was my freshman year, move out of home for the first time like most people. I got there the Thursday because it was freshman welcome week. My roommate wasn't there. I didn't know anything about him. I assumed he was a freshman the same way that I was. So fast forward this whole weekend, I'm thinking, I don't have a roommate. I'm in this room by myself. I'm having a good time. The Sunday night right before classes start, it's like 10 o'clock at night. My roommate finally shows up. Hey, how you doing? I met him, all of this kind of stuff. He then offered me a dream catcher. And I was like, no, I don't fool with that. I believe in Jesus. And then he said, do you want any shrooms? I then moved out of that place by Thursday. I couldn't do it. I got nothing against the man. We was cool ever since then. We just had two very completely different interests. I wasn't cool with living with that guy. I moved out that Thursday.
I mean, I think part of the most important thing for a good roommate situation is he's willing to share, right? You don't want like a selfish roommate. I actually think it's kind of nice of him not only to offer you the dream catcher, but he offered you some of his shrooms. I'm not saying that you should have taken them or not. That's up to you individually, but at least he was kind enough to offer you some of his shrooms.
I came back. So a couple of days pass, 72 hours pass. I then come back from class and he is doing a tattoo in our room.
On shrooms?
Strikes one, strikes two, strikes three. Again, I don't got no issue with the guy. You a grown man. You can do what you want to do. You offered me a dream catcher in the first 10 minutes of knowing you. You offered me shrooms. I then come back and you're doing black ink in the apartment. I can't do it. I can't. You do your thing, I'll do mine. It was time for us to go our separate ways to the end of the road, as you would say.
Whatever came with this guy? Any idea?
I don't know.
You don't keep up with him?
He was from Independence, Kansas, so maybe he was playing JUCO football on Last Chance U. I don't know.
We got to try to get that guy on the show.
I don't even remember his last name.
I wonder if he remembers you. He sounds like quite the character. He has to remember that he once lived for 72 hours with a guy named Carrington, and then at some point he's probably like, oh, I wonder if that's the same guy. How do you like your burger cooked before we play Rob's game?
Medium rare.
Ugh.
What other way are you getting burgers?
I know people aren't going to like this. You're not a man. Well done, man. Just leave it on there as long as you want. Give me a hockey puck with a little bit of cheese on it.
What?
Yeah, I like well done. I like well done everything.
You get your steaks well done?
Bro, I get my prime rib well done. And every single time, the waitress looks at me like, excuse me? I've been kicked out for that.
So I just want to understand. A couple of days ago, you were talking to me about frog legs and all these things and not trying it, which led me to believe that you had a very refined palate, that you were mature when it comes to food.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me that when you go, so when you and the lady go, you seem like a guy who would celebrate their 4-month anniversary. You seem like that kind of guy. So then you go up there and you're like, hey, Let's go to let's go out for a nice steak. We've been together for 120 days. Let's go to the nice steakhouse. But let's make sure that we sit 6 feet apart because we want to practice safe social distancing. And then the lady walks around and she says, how would you like your steak? You look at that woman in the face and tell her, well done.
Yeah. I'm embarrassed every time I do it, though. I try to say it under my breath. I kind of like do that whole cough thing. I'm like, well done. Like, excuse me, sir. Did you say well done? And then I get a side of au jus and horseradish. And honestly, if you dip anything in good au jus, it doesn't really matter how it's
cooked. You put horseradish on your steak, too?
Usually just on prime rib.
Okay, yeah, prime rib.
Yeah,
no,
usually absolutely. Just on my prime rib. But I'll put au jus on pretty much anything.
You think Rob celebrates 4 months anniversary?
Guaranteed.
Don't do this.
You can only celebrate six in a year. And then after that, you got to do every year. You can do six a year, and then it's 24 months, 30. You cannot. That's it. It's the only anniversary
gonna,
you can celebrate.
If you're going to celebrate 6 months, though, you either know that it's not going to last a full year or you're positive that it's going to last a full year. There's nowhere in the middle because what's the point of celebrating 6 months knowing that if we can just hang on for another 6 months, we've got an actual real documented anniversary?
I think you can do something light on the 6 year though, or the 6 months though. I'm not saying you got to do something big. I'm not saying that's the capital.
Well, if I'm
grill
going
day.
Out for a steak dinner on the fourth month, what am I doing on the 6 month?
That's you know what? Once you make that point, I can't argue.
You know what I'm saying? A surf and turf?
No, once you make that point, I can't argue. That might be your time to go to Red Lobster for the first time.
Deep sea fishing and cooking it up on the boat?
That might be the time to go to Red Lobster.
I got a question for y'all because I have a family member. Remember who does this. He and his girlfriend together 4 years. They celebrate their first date anniversary and the anniversary when they started dating. That's nonsense, right?
That's his girlfriend? That's his wife now?
That's his girlfriend. They've been together 4 years. They had their first date at a coffee shop. They go get coffee every year on that date. And then on the date they started dating, they go get a nice dinner, which is like 2 weeks later.
As somebody that's always been a little bit scared of commitment, your boy's a little bit scared of commitment. He's been with her for 4 years, not even proposed to the lady.
How old are they? Celebrate. That part matters, though. How old are they?
He's 26, she's 24.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's okay. I'm still on their side of dating. I'm still on the dating side.
Do you?
But you're okay with the two anniversaries?
No, I was going to ask if you were, I don't even was going to ask if your friends were Corey and Topanga. That's a little over the top. That's a little excessive. But I would also assume that she controls the relationship. Like, he's probably not watching Chiefs games Sunday at noon because they have to do something. They got to go run errands. They got to go to the grocery store. They got to make sure that the house is clean up. He's probably not watching Chiefs game at 12. He probably loves when they play at 3:25 because then you can finally sit down after cleaning up.
Well, then that's a breakupable offense, honestly. If your girl isn't going to have the respect for you to sit there on noon and watch a Chiefs game, you're trying to do it 16 times a year and then for a couple of playoff games, then you break up with her and you move on.
If you celebrate three different anniversaries, she definitely tells you when or you cannot watch sports.
And that's
you,
not a relationship I'm interested
you
in.
You are never watching the second NBA
Look,
game.
If you're a
you
baseball.
Might can watch the first NBA game, but that 9:30 West Coast tip.
No, you're going to bed.
You've never seen the Lakers play
honey.
Basketball. You've never seen Kobe play. You've never seen Anthony Davis play. You've never seen LeBron James play if you're in that kind of
no,
relationship.
You don't even know the Sacramento Kings are a team.
You've never seen USC play basketball or football. You've never watched Reggie Bush. You've never seen any of those things if that's the kind of relationship you're in. There's no chance that you're watching sports that late. That is Grey's Anatomy time. That's Desperate Housewives time. That is Real Housewives of wherever in the hell they are. No chance. No chance you're doing those things.
Yeah, that makes me sick to my stomach that there's actually people out there that are living that type of relationship. I genuinely feel bad for those people.
Coming up in about 15 minutes, we will talk about Tom Brady, who is selling his Escalade, and I would love to have the 2000s back. We'll also get into a Levine's list. But before we do that, let's keep talking about the burgers.
It's time for Tinder Tuesday on The Drive. Swipe right if you like it. Swipe left if you don't. Tinder Tuesday on The Drive.
Why'd you say it like Chris Berman?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
The Burgers. Stumbling, bumbling, mumbling. Whoop!
Whoop! McDonald's, boys. A nice McDonald's cheeseburger.
I don't have any issues with McDonald's. I'm swiping to the right here. I have absolutely no issue with McDonald's. Now, I admit I haven't ordered the combo in a very long time. If I can't get all my nutrition from two McDoubles with no onions and a small fry, then I need to go somewhere else. But yeah, I like McDonald's. I'm swiping right.
Yeah, if I can get a Big Mac, the special sauce. Honestly, I don't even need the burger. The special sauce is so good. Just put that on a couple of buns and I'd take a few bites out of it. So yeah, I'm swiping to the right for McDonald's.
What about Sean's place, Fuddruckers? I know where you're going, Sean.
Oh, Fuddruckers is phenomenal. Now, let me tell
you
a little trick.
Been to Fuddruckers?
They got one, or at least they had one a few months ago out at the Legends.
No, when was the last time you, Sean Levine, went to Fuddruckers? I'm not saying if one exists or not. I'm saying when was the last time that you got up in your car, drove, went to Fuddruckers, and spent real U.S. currency? Because I'm going to imagine this hasn't happened since 1998.
Oh, no, it's been more recent than that. In 98, I was going to the one on Metcalf across from King Louis. Rest in peace. I'm going to say 2017. I was at the one, maybe out at the Legends.
Okay.
I enjoy it. I think they got really good liquid cheese, whether you want the regular hot cheese or the jalapeno cheese. I like their onion rings, and they've got a claw machine at every single, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
The arcade machine, you get the little stuffed animals at every Fuddruckers I've been to, and the burgers are delicious. So that's my super swipe on Fuddruckers.
You already know. Let's move on. You already know.
What about Culver's?
You go to Fuddruckers. Come on, now. Keep it a buck with me. You like Fuddruckers?
I love Fuddruckers. I think it's highly underrated.
I think Culver's is highly underrated. Now, I'm going to swipe left on Culver's for this reason. I just don't go to Culver's very often, but I enjoy it every time I go. But Culver's is not a quick experience.
Well, the reason you don't go very often is because the one closest to us shares a parking lot with Chick-fil-A, and there's no way in hell you're passing a Chick-fil-A to go to Culver's. That's
I go to
why
Five
you go.
Guys, though. I go to Five Guys.
Yeah,
over
but
there,
I've gone with you to Five Guys. You go the back way. You don't pass Chick-fil-A. You've never passed a Chick-fil-A and not got something carried.
I don't eat Chick-fil-A as much as you think I do. Now I love it, but the line's always ridiculous in the drive-thru. So like I maybe eat Chick-fil-A once, twice a month. I don't eat Chick-fil-A nearly as much as you think I
Speaking
do.
Speaking of lines, that's my problem with Culver's, is that I'm going to go to a place that has a fast-through drive-through, knowing damn well that they're going to make me also wait 5 minutes afterwards.
That's so the biggest reason why I don't go
nothing
either.
Against the burger, but just the entire experience. I got to swipe to the left.
That's the biggest reason why for me,
crazy.
Too. But I love their food. I think their food is
great.
I think their food's fantastic. I'm just swiping left.
Yeah, clean up
for
your
that
act.
Reason.
Couple more here. What about Burger King?
I low-key like Burger King. Now, the biggest reason why I like it is the price. So we have a Burger King that's probably 2 miles from the station, and they got that little $4 combo where I can get two burgers, fries, and a drink for $4. I eat Burger King every once in a while, sometimes for lunch if I don't feel like spending money, which is kind of frequently. I'll stop at a BK.
Yeah, I'll stop at a BK for dessert. I love their little Snickers pies. Those are phenomenal. But if we're talking about just the burgers, Rob, on this being National Hamburger Day, Whoppers were good as a kid, but so was Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. But now I'm an adult, so I'm swiping the left.
Tell me more about this Snickers pie. You've piqued my interest.
You never had a Snickers pie?
I've never had a Snickers pie.
Yeah, it's by far the best thing. Burger King's got pretty good honey mustard also, but not with the pie, Rob.
I'm not going to lie, I just learned something very exciting.
Well, now you
Snickers
know.
Pie. Last one. This one's easy. Softball for Carrington. In-N-Out Burger.
Trash. I would delete the app if this popped up. In-N-Out is the most overrated thing in American society. The reason people like In-N-Out so much is you always have it in cool places. Every time I've had In-N-Out, I was either in Las Vegas, Phoenix, Arizona, or Los Angeles, California. Great place. It's warm. It's cheap. It's kind of fast. But ask anybody that likes In-N-Out, people that swear by In-N-Out. It's like some secret code and secret menu. Oh, well, you're not ordering it right. You got to do it. And then there's a 17-step process. I never have to do that at Five Guys. I never have to do that at Shake Shack. I never have to do that at Whataburger. I don't have to douse my fries in this magical sauce and meat for me to enjoy the fries or douse my food and all of this in order for it to be edible. In-N-Out is trash.
You talking
Absolute
about the animal
trash.
Sauce?
Yeah, trash.
The animal sauce is phenomenal, and you're pointing out that it's in Las Vegas, in Los Angeles, and Phoenix. It's a West Coast chain. That's crazy. It happens in all those places. And yeah, you
no,
go.
I'm,
to-
just, I'm saying is I think people like it because it's cool. Like I think if In-N-Out was in Davenport, Iowa, nobody would be checking for In-N-Out because they don't really like the food. They just like where they are. They just like that part
and
of it.
Nothing the matter with Davenport, Iowa, Bettendorf, Iowa. The four cities are phenomenal. The quad cities, whatever the hell they call themselves. It's fine up there.
You want to know how I know it ain't that cool? You can't even name the four
well,
cities.
It's all right.
Davenport, whatever they're called. It ain't that great of a place.
But I'm swiping to the right. You're wrong about that because every time I'm in Vegas, the same one that you're talking about right now, outside the back of the Link. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah. I went there one time. I gave it another try, and I was very disappointed, and they owe me money. In-N-Out Burger probably owes me $17 over the span of my lifetime.
That's four separate meals, and that's part of the reason why it makes it so great. Yeah, I'm absolutely swiping to the right on In-N-Out Burger. The only problem with that is the one that we're talking about in Vegas, all the pigeons gather around you and they take your fries, but the food's phenomenal.
Coming up in about 5 minutes, we'll talk about Tom Brady, not in the way that you think. But before we do that, it's time for a brand spanking new Levine's List.
You see Andre Dawson's job after baseball?
I did not.
He's a funeral director, which made me think, what are 10 jobs that I'm not cut out for? Number 10, a zookeeper. I love me some animals, but not when I have to go full Joe Exotic. Number 9, a crime scene cleaner. Think about it. Every single time you get the call, they're like, this happened on the highway, and bring your shovel. Number 8, a mortician. That's got to be worse than being a funeral director because you're actually dealing with the dead body. Number 7, a rodeo clown. Legitimately, your entire job is to make sure that the bull doesn't kill the person and you're supposed to put your body in harm's way. Yeah, I'm good on that. Number 6, because I don't like a ton of responsibility, a pilot, especially a commercial airline pilot. Yeah, way too much for me. Number 5, C-Dot, do you know what a steeplejack is?
I assume it's got something to do with horses.
No, you assume incorrectly, sir. It's the people that climb the communication towers. Oh. Basically like our radio tower outside.
I was just thinking steeplechase, so no. I was trying to put two and two
well,
together.
You thought wrong.
It obviously didn't equal 4.
Number 4, speaking of, a snake milker. One that milks the snakes. I don't want anything to do with these snakes, but I certainly don't want to milk them. Number 3, a high-rise window washer. I actually take sick joy in watching other people wash windows with a squeegee. I don't know why. I'll always stop and watch somebody do that. Unless it's high up, then it gives me anxiety. These guys up on the 80th floor in a high-rise washing windows, no, it's not worth it. Let the windows be dirty. Number 2, an astronaut. Some people's dream job, my worst fear. I'm good. I don't want anything to do with the shuttle. I don't even like airplanes. I get sick when I'm in the sky, let alone in a different atmosphere. And then number 1, a crab fisherman. What was that old show called? You know what I'm talking about?
Deadliest Catch.
Yeah, Deadliest Catch.
Oh, Deadliest Catch. Yeah. That was Dangerous Catch.
No, Deadliest Catch. I used to watch it at the beginning, and I thought, you know, maybe I'd like to do this if radio doesn't work out. And then I watched the rest of the episode, and the giant wave took the guy right off the boat. Dude ended up in the cage where the crab were supposed to be. I was like, yeah, no, that's not for me. And those are 10 jobs that are not for me, and that is today's Levine's List.
Coming up next, don't turn that dial. We will talk about Tom Brady and Derek Jeter in a way that will not annoy you. We have figured out the impossible on The Drive.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.